Thanks for joining us at the Business Growth Cafe, where each week we select from a menu of topics for a focused discussion with an industry expert to provide insights that can impact your business's growth. With your host, Angelo Ponzi.
I am Angelo Ponzi, your host here at the Business Growth Cafe, and thank you for joining us. In the cafe today, I have Brian Thompson, chief designer and owner of Brian Thompson Designs, to discuss his journey from corporate to freelance designer in the automotive world, to set designer, and that's kind of cool, TV host and advocate for an upcoming LGBTQ design for students, helping them pay for college to get them on the road to success. Brian, welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Normally what I do, we get started, let's tell the audience a little bit about yourself, and we're going to discuss your journey, so don't go too far down the rabbit hole, but just give us an overview.
I'll just stay up where the ears are.
There you go.
My name is Brian. Yeah, I am a car designer. I've been a car designer for about 2 decades, which is like sort of terrifying and exciting at the same time. Started my career out at Nissan, designed a Nissan in-house for a decade, an amazing experience there, and then transitioned to having my own consultancy just under my own name, and that's what I've been doing for the last 10 years. And cars and basically anything with wheels and wings and rivets and metal things, I work on it.
Yeah, looking at your website, there were some really cool designs. I'm sure you saw. I grabbed a screenshot from one of your promotions and used that in my promotion. It was very cool. Matter of fact, my son, who's in the spirits industry, and he does a lot of whiskey tastings and things like that.
I want that job.
He bought kind of a camper.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of I won't call it an Airstream, but this camper thing, and he's gutting it, and he's creating kind of a mobile display thing.
Oh, wow.
And he read your bio, and he said, "You think you can get him to do mine?"
Oh,
I said, "Yeah, probably, but not for free."
Well, I can certainly talk to him about it. That'd be awesome. Like, those things are great to do. They're perfect little, like, office display space, because they're like a tiny house, you know?
Yeah, well, yeah. I will connect you, because I'm sure he's listening, going, "Please, Dad, ask him."
Hello.
Before I start.
Yeah.
I like to ask a couple questions, and the first one is, when you think about your business and growing your business and keeping your business growing, what keeps you up at night?
Oh, God. That's a great question. We're going to start with, how do you lose everything question? Losing everything. You know what? It's like flying an airplane that sometimes runs out of gas. And I always think of it as like, I sometimes, you know, you're full of gas, you're flying high, you're going along, and then every now and then you run out of fuel, which is the work, and then you go a little lower and a little lower, and you see that horizon coming, and you're just waiting for the refueling plane to come along. I will say, in 10 years I've brushed the treetops, but I've never hit the ground yet. That's the biggest part, is you know, you're when you're at a corporation, your paycheck keeps coming. Mm-hmm. And when you work for yourself, you literally have to make your own work. So,
well, is it not entrepreneur, and I find this for myself a lot of times, you're chasing the business, opportunities come, now you're busy. Mm-hmm. And the pipeline starts to dry up. Why? Because you're not out there knocking on doors, because you're too busy to knock on doors. And then that project, if you will, ends. And all of a sudden, you know, you're turning the spigot, but there's nothing in it.
Yeah. You know, that is the trick. I found early on, you know, I would be so focused on the project, I wouldn't think about it. And sort of like, you know, you have to remember to like churn the pot and like, you know, play ping pong at the same time, right? You got to do both. And really, I find, like, you know, I'm a big fan of like Oprah Winfrey and Eckhart Tolle, and I really do believe in putting energy out there. So when I have found, like, just having faith in talent, that if the work does slow down, it will come back. I think the trickiest part of working for yourself is to remind yourself, because your self-esteem is established and retained by the work, because it's so much tied to you, that you're the same talented person when you are in demand as you are when you are not. And so if I just keep that in my mind, that you know, if it slows down, it will come. And I, you know, like I said, I can feel the treetops every now and then, but most of the time, it just keeps going.
Well, I think that's great advice. I mean, for anybody who's has a business and they're an entrepreneur, you've always got to have that confidence. That's what another guest had mentioned, just having confidence in yourself that your talent didn't change, just the workflow changed. And yeah, like you're saying, you just keep pushing for it. I've been at this again for 5 years, but as I was telling you in the hallway, I started an agency, and I grew that over a 13-year period of time. I was purchased, and then the people that purchased me put me back at the helm to run their agency.
Oh, cool.
So it was like 20-year period of time.
That's the best
that place. You're basically being an entrepreneur. Yeah. However, I have those that went up and down, didn't quite go anywhere. I did more than brush the treetops. I actually plowed into the ground, but that's okay.
Yeah, you come back up, right? And I think also really, it just comes down to like, I meet a lot of, you know, especially, you know, designers are, because we're so tied to our work, they can get very, sometimes they can have a reputation of being very egotistical and insecure.
Creative people?
I've never heard of that before. But I find if you're just a nice guy and people like working with you, then the work comes. You know, I can't tell how many people lose projects because people just don't want to work with them, you know, so.
Well, I mean, you know, yeah. So in the agency side of the world, of course, I was the account guy, the marketing guy.
Yeah.
And, you know, the creative sometimes that we didn't quite mash because I'm more kind of that logical, rational, we got to get things done.
Versus, you got numbers on your side.
Yeah, I got numbers and you guys are off, you know, creating, you know, this piece of art.
Yeah, we have moods and feelings. We always lose that argument. Always.
The other question is, what is the best business advice you've ever given and or received?
Oh, geez. Allow yourself to cheat and make mistakes. What I mean by that is that, like, you know, and the word cheat to me is like, you know, you the solution that you're supposed to deliver is not always the right solution, and sometimes you have to kind of go around the obstacle, you know, in a way that is just outside the norm, and make mistakes, because when you're doing that, you're going to make a bunch of mistakes, and just rely on your talent. Like I was saying earlier, if you keep your mind open and flexible and try new rules, you know, try something that's different than the rules say it's supposed to be, the talent will see you through, even when it's scary.
Yeah.
So.
So as a creative person, these aren't questions at all that I had written, but now we're going to go down another path.
For sure.
Yeah. So because of the fact that it is art, it is, you know, it's a little bit different. I do market research, you know, I'm getting stats and I'm doing calculations, and it's very divorced from emotional.
Yeah.
But when you're really pouring your heart and soul into a design and looking at some of the stuff on your website, it's just really cool. And you bring it to a client and they go, yeah, not what I wanted.
Oh, yeah.
That's that tug. That's hard.
Oh, yeah. Most of the time it happens that way. It's very rarely that it goes the other way. You know what? I like to think that, like, I mean, I, you know, when I was younger, it's sort of like having a Sophie's Choice situation with your children, but knowing that all of the children are going to be okay, if that makes sense, and I'll explain. I would get so invested in a design. And what I realized is that there is an unlimited supply of creativity. So if a client comes to you and you've developed something, usually in collaboration, it's usually like very rarely go off into an island and come back with something.
Right.
If they don't like something or they have another direction, if you think of that as fertilizer for more ideas, then you usually get to the same place with them with something that you're satisfied in, because you haven't just calcified onto one idea, you know, and it might, like, you know, come up with 100, you know, if they go, I don't like that, I want to do this, you're like, okay, I got 100 more ideas down there. I like to think of like Carol Channing when she would audition for like a role, and they would be like, they would stop her in a song and she'd have like 5 other songs at the ready. You want to hear this? How about this? I can tap dance, you know, and then she would, I'm not going to do a Carol Channing impression, not yet, but that I like the way she would always just, she had more to offer. And I think that's the key, is if you don't calcify with one idea, you know that your talent has more ideas, then you get to a place where you're happy with what you did.
To sum it up, not be so rigid.
Not be so rigid. Yeah. Just let it flow.
So I want to touch on this a little bit. I'm always conscious because these things go by really fast.
Yeah.
But so you worked at Nissan, kind of your corporate life.
Yes.
And then you became a freelancer.
Correct.
What inspired you? What was the motivation? I mean, because that's a tough change, and I've made that change. And, you know, the very first day you're out there, you're going, what the heck did I do, right?
But, jump off the
diving board. What was that motivation to drive you that way?
I think I was born and raised to be an entrepreneur and working for myself, and I just happened to land in a studio that encouraged entrepreneurship and creativity. I'm very grateful for my time at Nissan. Nissan is one of the only studios I've ever heard of in the world where they encourage their designers to have their own clients outside of the automotive industry. Hmm. Most of the time when you work for a car company, they own all of your intellectual property. Jerry Hirschberg, who started Nissan Design in the 70s, believe that you get more out of your designers if you allow them to populate other areas of creativity populate their brain with other areas of creativity. So what happened with me is that I went in like being like, I can sketch other things too. And so I just started developing clients, and I developed a relationship with Airstream way early on in my career.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Just by writing a fan letter. And I'd say after about 10 years of that, with the advancement of technology and the advancement of that confidence to try other what it's like to have clients, I got to the point where I was like, I really am enjoying this side of the business more than sketching Altimas and Sentras. You know, that was really fun for the first, you know, first time you work on each generation of a car. But after you've gone through a decade and you've done that, it's like there's something really exciting about the running of the business and connecting with the people and creating not just something that you draw on paper, but creating the brand sensibility and the values and creating something that's going to be meaningful to a client, whether it's cars or not. And so I after about the 10th year, I made that leap. Okay. It was not, and it was scary, but it was,
I woke up today and I'm going to go off on my own, or did you do a little planning?
It was a little bit of both. At the time, some things aligned in the stars. What really happened is I have a colleague named Anka Bodak who had decided to leave. And what happened basically was that Nissan, when the financial apocalypse happened in 2008, Nissan offered a buyout to people who had been there for a decade. And it was a very handsome package. So handsome that I think a lot of the A-game talent took it. And I was not sitting there at my desk, and I remember my colleague Anka came to my desk and she's like, I'm leaving and you're leaving with me. We're going to go design this car for a man named Tom Matano who created the Mazda Miata. And she just sort of woke me up. It snapped me out of it because I was like, you're never going to have this again. You're going to pay off your student, your year's salary in one check. I'm going to pay off my student loans and be debt free. So I went and we did that project together. And that's what I leapt into, was that project. And I'm very grateful. I know I would have always left, but I don't think I would have had she was the one that sort of kicked me in the pants to push out the door. And off we went together. And we work on everything. She's like my design wife. We work on everything.
So I find it interesting when you're talking about design. Are you the outside of the car, inside of the car, interior?
Little bit of both.
A little bit of both, okay.
Yeah.
So the 2020 models are about to come out. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you designed any of those 2020 models. But how much in advance are you doing your work before it actually gets to market?
That's a great question. I always say being a car designer is like living in the future, looking back on the present as if it's the past. It's about 7 to 10 years in advance. So by the time a car comes out, I rarely would want to buy a new car, because to me, that's what my life was doing 7 years ago by the time it gets to the road. And where we're living current is always so advanced and different. So what you're thinking about and excited about isn't what's the newest model anymore. It's what's going to be the new model in 7 years from now. So it's kind of a strange career where new cars look old.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And so in your work, any conversations going on about autonomous driving and having to deal with that? I mean, you're obviously in the automotive industry, and I'm going to stick in that industry for now.
Yeah, I would say that's the dominant conversation. What I can say without giving any, confidential information away is nothing I'm working on has a steering wheel anymore, and that includes cars. There's different levels of autonomy. There's what the market is ready for and what the market has now, meaning like the Tesla's level three that can park and drive themselves. But what's coming is so exciting, and it works. The industry is on I would say the industry is on the verge of a paradigm shift, where they'll still be driving. People who always say, don't take my steering wheel away, there's still that. But a lot of the commuting is going to be handled in a way that allows us, people who are occupants of the car, to have conversations like we're having right now. Okay. And I literally mean facing each other, talking, like an 1800s horse and buggy.
Do you still see it as more of a, I'm going to have my car, you're going to get your car? Are we talking about shared autonomous?
I think there's a both. The shared ride experience and business model is growing. And I think it's safe to say it will continue to grow. And I think it's even safe to say that we may see some car companies disappear that aren't prepared for that. Just to give a little background, I would say like 60% of my work is in the OEM level, and OEM means original established manufacturers, for your listeners who may not know. And the other 40% is Silicon Valley startups. And so I'm seeing both ends of the spectrum all the time. I see, when the car companies that have the established business model of selling like a mama bear, papa bear, baby bear model lineup to, vehicles that literally drive themselves without you ever being involved and can stop at random things like a child falling in front of the road or a house cat that gets in the way of the car or swarming technology. And that stuff is real and it's happening. And so I always think that there's some naivety in the startup world often, and there's also some resistance to change in the OEM. And there's somewhere in the middle where I think it's going to change faster than people realize.
Well, I think with with artificial intelligence, mm-hmm. machine learning, I mean, that stuff is coming more and more rapidly. And we look at kind of autonomous and long-haul trucking. I mean, that's kind of really there.
Yeah.
And so we're seeing these changes. That's scary.
Well, but that's a great word, scary. So it's scary until it doesn't, until you realize what it does for you. So people often say to me, oh, I would never ride an autonomous car, or I don't want to give up my steering wheel. But the way I look at it is, we as human beings would like to connect more. And right now we're in a world where we lose connection by jumping into a phone. But if you can imagine a world where connection happens, not only because of technology is going to come out of the phone and be all around us, meaning things like wearables or, you know, contact lenses and things where the phone is no longer holding us in and we can just talk to each other mm-hmm. like we used to do before phones. So too is design allowing that to happen. So what I mean, like when in carriage seating, if you and I were having a conversation, we're actually not thinking about the drive anymore. We're just being two humans
right.
talking, moving. And so that's what changes driving.
But it's kind of like being in a train, right? Sitting across from each other.
Yes, in a more advanced way that will feel less prescribed. But yes, for sure.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So
yes, sir.
I'm keeping conscious of my time.
I know.
What
rhythm.
What is your... What car's on the market that you're most proud of, or what is your most proud of moment? Give me 30 seconds on that one.
My most proud of? Oh, it's such an unlikely vehicle. I designed the Nissan NV2500 cargo van. I love that beast. I've always had a love for, you know, like I collect like vintage Japanese economy cars and very, you know, base cars. I always have had a love for like everyman cars. And so of all the things I ever worked on, I love that van. I think it, whenever I see it, people like beating it up and getting it dirty and putting their, you know, they've customized it, put their graphics on it. I see them every day and it makes me smile.
All right.
Yeah.
Very cool. So you've worked with cars and airlines and living spaces, tiny houses.
Yeah.
But you've also done a set design for Katy Perry.
I did a throw.
So, I mean, yeah. That's kind of a complete opposite other side. So how'd you get involved in that? And
oh, dear. You know, well, that's one of those things, you know, when the plane's about to hit the treetops?
Yep,
one of those stories.
Okay.
I have a good friend named Terry Whitaker who really does set design for, you know, everybody from back in the 90s to Weezer to much of Katy Perry's work. And really, I just went on set and helped because I didn't have any work at the time. And on set for the music video Roar, there was a throne that had been designed.
I remember that.
Katie's people didn't particularly care for it once it was there on set because it evoked another song. And so on set with Terry and some other different people in the crew, we developed a new throne right then and there on set and designed it and built it from scratch. And it was like, you know, since it was a jungle theme, it was like, I don't know, how many birds of paradise can we get? Okay, let's put them in here and try this. You know, and what I loved about that is it's so different than car design, where if car design is 7 years out, this is like 7 minutes out.
Yeah.
and then 7 days later, it's on the air. And then 7 weeks later, it's already gone. So I really loved the pace of that.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had the CEO of World of Dance on a few months back. And, you know, obviously we had talking about the show and how it had changed and come to life and what it started from. And it was really interesting. That whole world is interesting to me. I'm not a fanboy or anything, but I do like hearing about that kind of stuff. I was in the video and film industry for a short period of time. And so I was always very, very fascinated with that.
The pace and the fact that your heart never gets below like adrenaline heart rate, right? Because
you
have to do, everything is important and everything needs to be done now.
So you're obviously, at least from my standpoint, a very talented designer.
Thank you.
There's a lot of talented designers out there.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you attribute your success to when you're thinking about crossing over so many different projects?
Ooh, that is a great question. I think that I have always had a love for intimate spaces where people connect and communicate, even beyond cars. That's why I do so many camping trailers. When I was a little boy, I was always drawing little pods, which is odd because it's what's happening now in the industry. Mm-hmm. And I love any space that people can connect in. And so if you really think about that, it doesn't matter if it's a car with a bench seat that allows you to put your arm around your loved one, or a camping trailer where you're intimate together, or an airplane where it's a tube and you're connecting. Everything is always about connection. And so connection between people is what's always driven my design aesthetic.
Okay. I'm gonna jump to make sure we get this question in.
Okay.
Because I also knew you'd had a web series called Driven by Design. Yeah. I'm not going to talk about that too much.
It's okay.
But I want to talk. So you're also a philanthropist. and you were championing young designers. And you started the Brian Thompson Design Scholarships, created to reward exceptional, talented automotive designers. It was made possible by your experience on the television show Motor City's Masters.
Uh-huh.
And this is really kind of a fund that rewards talented LGBTQ design students and helping them pay for their college to keep them moving forward down the road, if you will, to success.
Yes.
So talk about this. I know you just had an event on Saturday.
Correct.
And I think you have another one coming up. I love this, you know, really helping to move young people forward, whether it's mentoring or providing scholarships. One of my clients, we do stuff like that. And it's just fascinating. And I want to make sure that we...
Sure.
It's a business strategy too, in a sense, but it's really about from the heart. And I love that.
Oh, for sure. And I always find any mentorship situation, I feel like I learn more from the mentee than maybe the mentee learns from me, because the world is always changing, and you sort of stay, you know, if you just stay where you were when you were the young designer, you become irrelevant. So I always learn from that. But aside from that, you know, I love my industry. I love the car industry, but I've always felt that there are challenges for gay and lesbian people in it to either stay in the closet or not come out. I've just seen it so much. And I got very inspired just by some personal issues and family understanding what homophobia was really in my 30s that I wasn't aware of. And it just opened me up to say, I want to communicate to any kids or young people somewhere, you know, that are not in the peripheral markets, maybe, you know, California, New York, maybe elsewhere in the country, that if anybody is telling them that something's wrong with them for how they feel inside, those people are wrong. Focus on your talent. And your talent is what will make you grow. And so, the long and short of it is I agreed to do the reality show, saying if I won, I would donate the funds. And basically, through a long story that I won't tell here, I got second place and I never got the prize. So I've been like, I was like, you know what? Forget it. I'm not waiting for that. I'm going to do this myself. So yes, we've had our first fundraiser, first major fundraiser last weekend. And we're at about $10,000 now. And we're going to have another fundraiser in Palm Springs on October 18th. At their Grand Great Autos of Yesteryear concourse, tied into that. I'm sort of planning that right now. Okay. So
you can find that on their website and stuff.
Yes, and I can that wouldn't be on there yet, but people can certainly come to my website and I can give the information as it grows, which is just my name, BrianThompsonDesign.com.
There you go.
Yeah,
perfect. Well, how we doing, Paul? I got a couple minutes left. 1 minute left. All right, so. Why don't you tell the audience how they can reach you, which
sure.
You kind of just did, but yeah. Go ahead and do that again and all the places they can find you.
Yeah, you know, I do have a presence on Instagram. I love Instagram. It's just I wish I had some cool name like Wolf or like, you know, Steve DeLorean or something, but it's just my name, Brian S. Thompson. Brian with a Y, S like Scott Thompson, and I'm on all platforms, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram is the same. And then again, my website, BrianThompsonDesign.com.
Yeah, I encourage people that if you haven't, you probably haven't, but I encourage you to go to a site. There's some really cool concept sketches in there that's kind of futuristic. I enjoyed looking at them. So thank you so much for driving down from Los Angeles for this show. I really appreciate it. I think you also managed to get a client meeting in right after this.
Yes.
Too, so that's perfect. And you described what you're doing. I won't tell the audience, but it's really cool.
Yeah.
But anyway, thank you for joining us at the cafe today. You can find out more about me, read my blogs, or view my show videos, or sign up to receive future information at theponzigroup.com, or connect with me on LinkedIn. And if you're in the business, and if your business is ready for growth and you need a CMO, but you're not quite ready for a full-time person yet, connect with me. I'd love to talk to you about the opportunity and to explore the benefits of using a fractional CMO. Or if you're a small business looking for a business coach or advisor, reach out to me as well. I'd love to have a conversation, maybe steer you in the right direction. Lastly, please subscribe. And if you're already a subscriber, I encourage you to think about who else would enjoy this show and ask them to subscribe as well at the Business Growth Cafe or on any major podcast platform, iTunes, iHeartRadio, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Spreakers, and many more around the world. Join me next week for lunch at the Business Growth Cafe.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to today's discussion at the Business Growth Cafe with your host, Angelo Ponzi. Take a moment to subscribe to this podcast and visit our website at www.businessgrowthcafe.com. Read Angelo Ponzi's blogs at www.theponzigroup.com.